If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people with credit card debt. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, the first step is yours. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-350-3241. 800-350-3241. That's 800-350-3241. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM-19, Oregon DM-80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission. License number DC-32.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. A bold call for the spread of democracy in the Middle East, even in the face of the apparent failure of the short-lived Arab Spring, with a former State Department and White House Middle East expert. It's tonight on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Elliot Abrams served as Deputy Assistant to the President and Deputy National Security Advisor under President George W. Bush, where he supervised U.S. policy on the Middle East. Previously served in the Reagan administration as Assistant Secretary of State for Human Rights and Assistant Secretary for Latin America, where he did gain a degree of unfortunate infamy in the Iran-Contra scandal. He's currently a senior fellow for Middle Eastern Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, teaches U.S. policy in the Middle East at Georgetown's School of Foreign Service. And the latest brilliant piece of work out of Elliott, Realism and Democracy, American Foreign Policy After Arab Spring. Welcome back, Elliott.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
And I just got to mention, it's very sentimental to us. Very first guest we went into syndication for John, my producer, and I. So we're happy to have him here. And we're going to jump right in.
Okay.
To me, this is an incredibly audacious book. And I find myself wanting to agree with it. But we've got in the face of us two wars that many people feel have been failed wars. Obviously, Iraq and Afghanistan, 17 years. Discarding of nation building, counterinsurgency, public fatigue. Some discrediting of the neocons, and here you are with this bold book. Tell us what your thinking is.
Okay, well, first, in Iraq and Afghanistan, we did not go into those wars to promote democracy. Let's not kid ourselves. Mm-hmm. We went into Afghanistan because the Taliban was hosting Al-Qaeda. And in Iraq, we thought they had weapons of mass destruction. This is more like World War II. You know, we didn't go into World War II to democratize Japan. We got in because they attacked us. Mm-hmm. But the question we then, we face in the Middle East now is, should we care about this, right? I mean, we care about foreign policy. We care about what nations do outside their borders. Should we care about what's going on inside? And the argument I make is yes, especially because we're worried about Islamic extremism. We're worried about jihadis, Al-Qaeda, ISIS. And the argument I make in the book is that dictators, tyrants, are really not very good at handling Islamic extremism. They don't really defeat it because Islamic extremism is actually a set of ideas from Muslim extremists about how to live your life, about how to organize the country, about, in their view, how does God want you to live? How does the Quran tell you to live? It's a set of ideas, and you can't defeat those ideas just with policemen. You've got actually to create or support different ideas, better ideas. Yes, you need police. You need the military. When they take up arms, they need to be defeated. But it's not enough. You also need to defeat their ideas. And that means you're going to need to worry about what kind of political system there is and whether it's just trying to put people in jail. That isn't enough. It won't work. That's the basic argument.
Let's digress for a second. I want to get back, obviously, to this. There's a lot of big stuff going on right now, and I just want to go through it quickly, get your take on this. Jerusalem moving the capital there.
Yes.
Very unconventional. What's your feeling on that, and does that effectively end the two-state approach and maybe move to one state where Palestinians could actually have greater population than the Jewish population in Israel?
Yeah, I don't think so. Look, I think the president did the right thing because Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. I mean, you know, we had, I'll tell you this story. Barack Obama goes over there in 2016, lays a wreath at the grave of the late Israeli president, Shimon Peres, and the White House tweets out the photo. President Obama lays a wreath at the grave of Shimon Peres, Mount Herzl Cemetery, Jerusalem, Israel. An hour later, they send out a corrected tweet where they have literally the same thing. They draw a line through the word Israel. And I wrote a piece, a blog item then, saying, where does President Obama think Shimon Peres is buried? Where does he think that cemetery is? Jerusalem where? On the moon? So, you know, it is the capital of Israel, and recognizing reality is always a much better basis for any policy you're trying to pursue. It does not close the door to a settlement. The president was very careful. You know, if you go back and look at the YouTube, he read the statement, because it was very carefully designed to say the actual borders of Jerusalem are going to be settled someday, we hope, in a negotiation between Israelis and Palestinians. West Jerusalem, where the capital of Israel, that is, the buildings really are, the parliament, the president's office, prime minister's office, Supreme Court, the Arabs don't even claim that. When they say we want to go back to 67 borders, before 67, that was still Israeli, that part of Jerusalem. So the president did not take the possibility of a negotiation off the table. I got to tell you, I'm pretty pessimistic myself about whether that's going to happen. You know, 8 years of Obama, there wasn't one day of serious negotiating. 1 year of Trump, there really hasn't been a day of serious negotiating where they've sat down at the table with each other. I think it's very hard to be optimistic.
Do you believe there's a potential this big deal with Jared Kushner?
No. And I have told Mr. Kushner and the other, the negotiator, Jason Greenblatt, exactly that. I think things can get worse or can get better, but the idea of a big comprehensive peace deal does not seem to me realistic right now.
They think it's a real estate deal. So Pakistan, we've cut the aid to them and the Palestinians. Is that a good thing? And what about unintended consequences? We need to go through the Pakistani border to get into Afghanistan, et cetera.
Yeah, we do. I mean, I think what the president is doing here, I have to say, I think it's good. It's the reality principle. Mm-hmm. Palestinians and Pakistanis have gotten used to playing us for suckers very often, just taking endless amounts of money. But when we ask for something, they find reasons to fool us or say no. And the president is saying, look, we're going to put an end to that. It is true that getting into Afghanistan, if you can't access Pakistan, is harder. But, you know, you can come from the West. You can come from the North, certainly.
Yeah.
We did that during the war. You know, came down, the Afghan war. We came down from the stands by rail and by air. Makes it a lot harder. But I think it is time to call the bluff. And Zal Khalilzad, who was our ambassador to Afghanistan under President George W. Bush, wrote a piece last week that basically said, it's time. You know, we've been giving them endless amounts of money while they are supporting the Taliban.
Yep.
So it's time to stop.
I always think that both them and the Palestinians are nothing but two-faced, and I don't know why we've put up with it for so long. Now let's get back to the Elliot Abrams book here. Human rights, first off, it was a big thing under Jimmy Carter, and it's obviously at the core of your book. It should be the organizing principle, you say. What's the difference between the Jimmy Carter human rights and the Elliot Abrams, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, or whatever you want to call it, human rights?
Well, first of all, Carter was talking only about human rights and not really about democratic systems. And the problem with that is that, you know, if you intervene to get this guy out of jail, that guy out of jail, they can put him in jail faster than we can get him out. The real solution in the end is a democratic system where they're not putting any opponent of the regime in jail. So Reagan was in favor of long-term systemic change. And he was also very careful to make sure that the change would not make things worse. And when you think of the changes that took place under Ronald Reagan, he pushed Ferdinand Marcos out in the Philippines, Pinochet out in Chile, Chun Doo-hwan out in South Korea. None of those places went communist in those days because he understood you need to worry a lot about who's next. You need to make sure that the army, the security forces are in place. People forget, and I always like to tell them, in the case of Chile, when the right-wing dictator Pinochet was pushed out and they elected, freely elected a president, who was in charge of the army? Pinochet. And Reagan knew that. He knew Pinochet staying there. He knew exactly who was going to be elected over the next 10 years coming from the Christian Democratic Party. He knew in the Philippines that the head of the army, Fidel Ramos, who was later president, was going to be there and be sure to prevent chaos. And if you think about when do things go bad, when does it become just really awful for the people of the country and us when there's chaos? Russia, 1917. Cuba, 1959. Iran, 1979. Sandinistas in Nicaragua, 1979. When there's chaos, the worst elements take over. And Reagan understood that. And Jimmy Carter, you know, he was all over the lot. I mean, he has a great reputation for human rights, but remember where he spent New Year's Eve, his first year as president. It was in Tehran, telling the Shah how terrific he was. And a year, you know, a year later, he's gone.
You'll see the Business Talk with Jim Campbell, the Business Talk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country. You can go to biztalkradio.com, find the station closest to you, listen over the Internet, get our podcast. We'll look more into detail on the failure of the Arab Spring in the next segment with Elliot Havens.
I live alone and rarely have visitors. So when I slipped and fell in the kitchen last month and couldn't get to a phone, I knew I was in trouble.
Help!
I could barely move.
Help!
I tried calling for help, but no one could hear me. As I lay there, I couldn't help but think of my kids and grandkids having to go on without me. I was terrified. It took 8 hours for my neighbor to find me. It could have been the end of me. That's when I knew I needed Life Alert. With just one press of this button, I'm connected to the Life Alert Center, where I can get the help I need, even when I cannot reach a phone. With Life Alert, I'm never alone.
Call 1-800-414-1958 for your free Life Alert brochure. That's 1-800-414-1958. 1-800-414-1958. Call for your free Life Alert brochure today at 1-800-414-1958.
Do you have an idea for an invention or new product? Do you think companies would be interested in your idea? Do you want to try to get a patent? Then call InventHelp now. InventHelp keeps your idea confidential and explains every step of the invention process. We create professional materials representing your idea and submit it to companies who are looking for new ideas. We have more than 9,000 companies who have agreed to review ideas in confidence. If a company shows interest in manufacturing your invention, we can negotiate on your behalf. We have helped over 10,000 clients receive patents. We also offer services including 3D modeling and animation demonstrating your idea, prototyping services, and we use state-of-the-art technology to show InventHelp client ideas to additional companies. Join the thousands of people just like you who chose InventHelp to pursue their idea. We are experienced. We are working for you. We are InventHelp.
Call us for free information at 1-800-607-8900. That's 1-800-607-8945. Again, 1-800-607-8945.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to a $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back with former Assistant Secretary of State for Human Rights under the Reagan administration, Elliot Abrams. And before we go into the Arab Spring countries, just quickly, we seem to alternate between detente, realpolitik, and the more idealistic Wilsonian approach you're talking about. Isn't that just inevitable?
I think it is. I mean, we do swing. So you get a president who pushes far, and then you get a president who consolidates. I mean, I think this has been going on for 100 years. I'm not quite sure where Trump fits in this because, you know, Obama was a kind of pulled back, certainly, after the ambitions of George W. Bush. It's harder to put Trump in one of those two camps, push forward or pull back. And it's only been a year. It's not quite clear.
All right. Now we're going to look at the why the Arab Spring failed and what you think could change around these countries. We're going to look at three countries where it didn't work, and then a couple in the that have monarchical systems, monarchies, and if there's a difference there. Egypt, did we end up with something worse and with the Muslim Brotherhood, and how do we get it back on track?
Well, very important because it's about 90, 95 million people, the most populous Arab country. I think it is worse in the sense that President Sisi is more repressive than President Mubarak was, and he's got about 50,000 political prisoners in prisons there, and those prisons are jihadi factories. You know, you take some young guy who has not committed a crime of violence, who's not a jihadi, he just demonstrated against the regime, put him in jail, and he listens to debates between the Muslim Brotherhoods and Al-Qaeda trying to recruit him, and he ends up in one of them. So I don't think that's a formula for success at all, and they're not going to be able to improve the economy because the army owns about half the economy.
Wow.
They're not going to be in favor of economic reforms. So I'm worried about Egypt. I don't think they have a formula for success.
Now, what about a country like Libya where the strong man Gaddafi is taken care of, but it ends up as a broken country?
It's a mess. I mean, it like Syria, it basically just collapsed. And they have still not been able, though they're trying, I mean, there are some negotiations now, to put in place a kind of government of national unity. But look, they had 40 years of Gaddafi, who destroyed every institution in the country. So it was almost inevitable. Unless you plan to go in there, and the U in this case would most likely be Europe, unless you plan to go in there with an occupation force, it was pretty much predictable, I think, that there would be chaos. All one can hope for is that we and the Europeans and the UN can help them negotiate some kind of deal that brings down the level of violence.
In Syria, we have a guy who's used chemical weapons and forced out migration, which has really sort of destabilized Europe in many ways, Germany upcoming probably, and then Russia intervention. We haven't done regime change. We haven't crossed red lines there. What about Syria?
Well, I must say, I think we could have done a lot better in Syria if President Obama had been willing to do anything. The turning point was when he declared a red line and then abandoned it, because that's when Russia and Iran really, I think, souped up their activities in Syria once they knew the United States was not going to do anything. I think if we'd been supporting the protests, the opposition, from the beginning, we might have had a much better result. Now, I think the first thing to do is try to get the level of violence down and see if it's possible to get what you might call a soft partition, you know, a Sunni zone, an Alawite zone that Assad controls, a Kurdish zone. But to do that, frankly, you know, John Kerry, when he was Secretary of State, never learned a critical lesson. You cannot win at the bargaining table what you have not won on the battlefield. So to win that on the battlefield means we're going to have to continue our support, not with American troops, but support for non-jihadi Syrians who are willing to fight for their country.
Oh, Elliot, how much of a negative was when Obama decided not to cross the red line, did our credibility across the whole Mideast take a huge hit?
You know, Jim, not only across the Middle East, the world. Putin saw that. Xi Jinping in China saw that. Yeah. And everyone said, okay, I got it now. This guy's not going to ever really push us. You cannot take his word for it. And I think it's very important that President Trump reversed that in one of his earliest actions and did bomb Syria. And by the way, you know, was it World War III? No, it was one day. So I think people looking back will realize that that was one of the critical moments in the whole Obama administration. People, leaders around the world looked at that and said, okay, the American credibility is shot.
It's interesting to me that, you know, Obama is such an intelligent guy. He did so much thinking about it. People say George W. Bush was more shoot from the hip. But Obama seemed to leave, after all that thinking, seemed to leave the Middle East worse off than he found it, which is kind of confounding to me. I don't know if you
I think the thinking was based on an ideology that he had, which was the more the United States does, the worse everything gets around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you look back at the 20th century, boy, that's not the lesson I draw. It seems to me that American power was used for our own interests and for the advancement of freedom around the world, winning the Cold War. But Obama seemed to have a different view.
Now, get back to the Arab Spring and why it failed in the short run. What about countries that have monarchies in place? I mean, yeah. Saudi Arabia seems to have moved even slower to democratization.
You know, it's very interesting, and I want to use a word here, legitimacy. Because the guys who were overthrown, these fake republics in, you know, Libya, Syria, Egypt, they were just ruling by brute force. They had fake parliaments and fake elections and fake courts. But the kings and the sheikhs seem to have some real legitimacy in the eyes of their own people. None of them were overthrown.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, they've got a chance, if they're willing to do some reform, to keep that legitimacy. And I think we're seeing that in Saudi Arabia. No democracy at all. But you have the young crown prince who is saying, I want to do economic reform to give people opportunity. I want to do social reform so that women have a chance here in Saudi Arabia, so that we're not living in the 14th century. He's extremely popular, it seems. I mean, they don't have elections, but It seems, with young Saudis. And it's an interesting contrast with Iran. People are in the streets in Iran because they see their government is the obstacle to change. In Saudi Arabia, they see this young crown prince as the engine of change. So there's nobody protesting in the streets of Saudi Arabia.
Now, in the last 2 minutes, I want to ask you, because where has this long-term move to democratization worked? And you have experience in Latin America, and you talk about the Philippines. Give us examples of success stories.
Well, I would say Reagan has a number of stories where, you know, there's a huge democratization wave of Latin America. Always, some of them snap back. Some of them, like Venezuela, were democracies and then snap back. But when Reagan came in, there wasn't, I think there were two democracies in Latin America, and when he left, there were about 15. In Asia, you see now Taiwan, for example, having become a democracy, South Korea, a strong democracy, and the states that were run by the Soviet Union, the satellites, like Poland. I think that we tend to get too down in the mouth here. The American record in the last century of expanding democracy is really a very good one. And if you think of Reagan and the Soviet Union, people should not think, uh-oh, this means more wars. Margaret Thatcher once said Ronald Reagan won the Cold War without firing a shot. So this is not a formula for invading. This is a formula for using our economic power and our diplomacy to put a lot of pressure on those dictatorships.
Can there be democracy in the Middle East? That's our final segment with Elliot Abrams.
There's more than one way to invest in your education. Investing in the right products, securities, and real estate generates secure and sound futures. What about an investment that retains its value? Consider college real estate. College real estate can provide housing for students and generate returns for their families. Through this special offer from Austin iLabs, you can download the free workbook from collegerealestate.com to see if this investment is right for you. Go to collegerealestate.com/radio.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
I'm a squeaky toy, and I've got one job, getting chomped on by this little ankle sniffer. So pardon me for feeling inept compared to Geico, who does so much more. Like, while I'm getting slobbered on, Geico is creating cool technology like their mobile app, which lets people pay their bills or file a claim. Plus, Geico is the fastest growing auto insurer for the last 10 years. Is it too much for me to ask for one more feature? Fast and friendly claim service like Geico, maybe? Oh, great. I'm getting buried again.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
If you're suffering from hearing loss, stay tuned for a special offer from the makers of Listen Clear, a revolutionary hearing aid breakthrough designed by top audio engineers to fit your ear almost invisibly. Right now, you can try Listen Clear hearing aids absolutely free for 45 days. You can also qualify for free shipping and free batteries for life. Listen Clear hearing aids are so lightweight and comfortable, you can wear them all day long. They're practically invisible too, so others won't even notice you're wearing them. And the best part is, you'll be able to hear almost everything, everywhere. So do something about your hearing loss. Call Listen Clear now to get started with your 45-day risk-free hearing aid trial. This special offer won't be available for long, so call Listen Clear now.
800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. We're here 24 hours a day to help. That's 800-716-4650.
If you are struggling to pay or haven't been making your student loan payments, listen carefully to this urgent alert. Have you been out of school for 10 or more years and you're still making your student loan payments? Are your student loans past due or even in default? Can't go back to school because of an old student loan problem? Fast Track Student Loans can get your student loans out of default, stop any wage garnishments, stop collection calls, and stop seizure of your tax refund. Give yourself a break. Stop the stress and get your student loan payments down to as little as $25 a month based on what you can afford to pay. One quick 10-minute call could help you solve your student loan problems. So call right now. Not available in all states. Payments may vary based on income.
800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. That's 800-685-0129.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back. Former Deputy National Security Advisor for Middle East Policy under George W. Bush, Elliot Abrams. Okay, so I'm going to ask first off, has the Arab winter, the door for it, closed? Was it just a one seasonal thing? And secondly, you have to be talking generational change, which is usually way beyond the attention deficit of American people's willingness to support stuff.
Well, first, you're right. We're talking about major changes and evolutions in countries. George Bush used to say this is the work of generations, and I think it is. I mean, if you take Saudi Arabia, for example, or, well, better example, Jordan, Morocco, Kuwait, all of them are monarchies, but all of them have elections, and they have parliaments. Now, are they going to become constitutional monarchies like we see in Europe? I'd say give it 50 years, and that's, I think it's very likely, but give it 5 years, no possible way. So we do have to think in longer terms. I don't think, the Arab Spring is over, but I don't think you can say that the hopes for better government in the Arab world are over. There's lots of opinion polls that suggest that people in the Arab world do want democracy, and they seem to mean by it pretty much what we mean by it. I mean, nobody wants the secret police coming around at midnight to grab your son, take him off to jail.
Is Islam compatible with democracy?
Yeah, I think the problem has been more in the Arab world. I mean, if you think there are lots of Muslim countries, from Senegal in Africa to Indonesia and Malaysia in Asia, that are Muslim countries that have sustained democracy for long periods, Bangladesh, another example. So I don't think it's so much an Islam problem as it is an Arab culture problem.
How about back now? What about backsliding? And right now, it's worrisome what Erdogan in Turkey is looking like.
Well, there is backsliding. Again, there's backsliding everywhere. I mean, in the Western Hemisphere, Venezuela, Bolivia, Ecuador, which were democratic and then moved away from democracy. So that's not a great surprise that happens in the Arab world. Turkey, the case you're mentioning, is a terrible case because it moved in and out of democracy for a long time. You know, there were coups, then a democratic government, then a coup. Now it's really the worst it's been, both in terms of the level of repression, and also Erdogan is an Islamist, and he seems determined to move the country in an Islamist direction and away from Europe. But I want to go back to something I said in, I guess, was the first segment. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't beat the Islamists just by arresting them. You've got to have a better set of ideas. In Turkey, you know, the Islamists would win an election, and the army would come in and do a coup. You know, 5 years later, you have another election. The Islamists win, so the army does a coup. They declare the party, let's say, they call it the Justice and Welfare Party, illegal. So they reorganized. Now it's the Welfare and Justice Party. Comes back, wins an election. That was not defeating the Islamists. That was just throwing them out of office. Now you get to 2018, and they're in power. So I think it's a lesson, and the lesson is you've got to defeat their ideas in addition to just putting a few people in jail.
Let me ask you now about linkage. Scoop Jackson, who you work for, had the Jackson Amendment and was a strict linkage between human rights and other arms reforms, et cetera. How do you deal with that in the real world and take no linkage when Obama did a nuclear deal with Iran but kept silent on the Green Revolution or human rights?
Yeah. Scoop Jackson and the what was called the Jackson Amendment on trade with the Soviet Union, you know, it wasn't a formula for war. It didn't break relations with the Soviet Union. It just said you're not going to get certain economic benefits on the basis of human rights abuses. Obama administration didn't want anything, anything, anything to interfere with his nuclear negotiation, whether it was using poison gas in Syria or supporting terrorism, nothing. We've recently seen some revelations that Hezbollah was engaged in drug trafficking, cocaine trafficking to the U.S. Don't want to hear about it in the Obama years because that could interfere with our negotiations with Iran because Hezbollah is supported by Iran. That's crazy. I mean, that is not what we should be doing. But some form of linkage, I think, is actually very sensible because we have an interest in seeing the expansion of democracy and human rights around the globe. Let me put it a different way. Should we be on the side of these dictatorial regimes or on the side of the people of those countries who want to get rid of those regimes? I think what President Trump has done in the last week has been right. He's made it very clear we're on the side of the people, something which was not so clear in the case of Iran in the Obama administration. So linkage, I think, is an intelligent way of using American diplomatic and economic pressure. I'd like to see us do more with Iran. You know, the Revolutionary Guards own half the economy. Okay, they should be under sanctions.
There's always this, you know, the approach that national interest should drive foreign policy. On a moral basis, in the failure to act in Rwanda, where there was a huge genocide, almost a million people killed in the Clinton administration, or in Syria, where more recently, where the chemical weapons, should morality have dictated that we intervene more, or just that we don't want to get boots on the ground?
I mean, each case is going to be different. Bill Clinton now says that's about his greatest regret, certainly in foreign policy in his administration, that he didn't see it and act. You've got to ask yourself, what precisely would you have done? You know, it's one thing to say we should have paid attention and we should have tried. It's another to be able to identify exactly what actions you could have taken that would have been better. In the case of, say, Rwanda, which is, you know, I'm not an Africanist. I don't know precisely what we could have done. We certainly could have directed more international attention. In the case of Syria, it's easy. It's what Trump did. Yeah. I mean, Syria is no superpower. You could knock out their air force in one day. In the case of Iran, it isn't a matter of, you know, invading the country. It is a matter of keeping attention focused by tweets, by speeches, by UN sessions, exactly what Trump is doing, keeping attention focused on what's happening in Iran. Each case is going to be different. And you need to decide what can we do here that's effective and that isn't going to get us involved in a war. But sometimes, as in the case of Syria, sometimes it does mean a military strike.
Tell us, what are the biggest steps that we need to do to build this long-term transformation to democracy in the Middle East?
We need, first of all, to take a look at several things we are already doing but not doing well. We give a lot of foreign aid. Is it effective? Is it effective in helping people? This is not our country. These countries are places where their own people are going to have to build a better system. Are we helping them effectively? You know, we have VOA and the other radios do a lot of broadcasting. Let's say to Iran, is it effective? Are people listening? And if they're not listening, why not? What's wrong with the broadcasting we're doing? Are we using American economic power effectively? For example, sanctioning individuals who are engaged in massive human rights abuses. We're now doing that with respect to Russia. Most of all, though, I think this is a matter of the bully pulpit. My experience was that what matters most is what the President of the United States, Vice President, Secretary of State say. And the effectiveness of our ambassadors and our State Department depends largely on what the president's saying, because people, you know, foreign governments, they don't really care what some third-ranking person in the embassy says, unless it's clear that he or she is truly saying what the president thinks. So it starts at the top, and I think it's critical that in any case we're really interested in, Iran's a good example, you need to hear from the president and the secretary of state first.
What is the timetable now that you're talking about, and is there some sort of sequencing that has to go on to get these guys from A to B?
Again, you know, each case will vary. Look at, say, Haiti. They've been struggling to build a democracy for decades and made very little progress. There's no reason to think they're going to get there in a couple of years. compare Iran, where people overthrew the Shah to build a democracy. Instead, they got Khomeini. And they keep rising up. They did in 1999. They did in 2009. Mm-hmm. They did again just now. And there's every reason to think that Iranians are educated enough, have a big enough middle class, that they could build a democracy if the regime would get out of the way. And the example I give you there would be Chile, where we thought, you know, if Pinochet would get out of the way, if the military regime would allow free elections, they could build a democracy pretty much overnight. And they did. And they did. So, you know, cases vary. In many cases in the Middle East, this is, as President Bush said, the work of generations, and it's going to be slow. And oddly enough, it may be the monarchies that can get to a more stable, more democratic, more peaceful situation as they move slowly toward constitutional monarchy.
Thanks to Elliot Abrams for giving us a fascinating hour. It just takes a certain amount of guts to go against conventional wisdom and also to have a long-term perspective, which we don't normally have. Realism and Democracy, American Foreign Policy After the Arab Spring is the book. You've been listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell. We're going to move to revolution in Iran next with an expert on Iran who's Iranian himself. Thanks a lot, Elliot.
Thanks.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-711-6812 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-711-6812. Again, that's 800-711-6812.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-595-6619. That's 800-595-6619. Again, 800-595-6619.
Are you married? Do you and your husband both have term life insurance? If you both don't, you should. You have a lot to protect. Call now, get a free quote for your husband, and while you're at it, get a quote for yourself too. Because you both need term life insurance. Call now. 800-915-9658, 800-915-9658, 800-915-9658. Rates are at all-time lows. We'll shop over 30 top-rated companies to get you the best possible rates. Term life insurance, it's the perfect way to protect the quality of your family's lifestyle. You and your husband both need term life insurance, so call now for a free quote for the both of you. 800-915-9658, 800-915-9658, 800-915-9658.
How old are you? 25, 35, 50, or older? If you have pain, we can help. Do your knees hurt?
Ow!
Let me ask you again. Are your knees killing you?
Oh, yeah. Are they ever?
What about your back? When you bend over, does it feel like this? How about when you get out of bed in the morning? If you're like me, your knees and back feel like this.
Oh, that hurts.
I found a company called the Pain Relief Hotline. They specialize in ways to treat your knee, back, and neck pain without surgery or taking medications. The good news is if you have insurance, you may have little or no cost or out-of-pocket expense. I've used them. It works. Call the Pain Relief Hotline now for free information. 800-303-4607. 800-303-4607. Call now. 800-303-4607. That's 800-303-4607.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back for our final segment. Protests in Iran. Is the country ripe for revolution? An expert on Iran and an Iranian himself returns to our show to go inside Iran. Misaj Parsa, professor of sociology at Dartmouth. He specializes in Middle Eastern and Asian studies, and he was on our show recently for his book, Democracy in Iran, Why It Failed and How It Might Succeed. Welcome back on short notice, professor.
Thank you.
One of your major points when we last spoke was that you were fundamentally pessimistic about change without a real revolution. Well, where are we now? Is this one real?
This one was an attempt. I don't think it's real. It could have pushed forward, but again, it proves that the Islamic Republic really is not going to respond to the demands of the people unless there is a major push from all segments of the population, where a broad coalition could be formed between students, workers, the middle class, women, but also the merchants to push for the fundamental changes within the Islamic Republic. The problem is that it did not get that far, unfortunately.
It's in the beginning stages. How is this different or could be different from the Green Revolution in 2009 that did not end up changing things for the long term?
Great question. In 2009, the leadership of the movement was within the reformist faction of the regime. So the leadership of the movement was not interested in fundamentally altering the nature of the Islamic Republic. But the people who were participating in the movement quickly became radicalized, and their slogans basically called for the overthrow of the Islamic Republic. They were calling death to dictator, death to Ahmadinejad, death to Khamenei. Khamenei was a murderer, and his leadership was revoked. And they were calling for an Iranian republic as opposed to the Islamic Republic. The leadership was not interested in altering. But at any rate, the main problem at that time was political repression. They could not bring the working class on board. They did not also bring the merchant class. It was mostly a middle-class movement in 2009 to 2011. And in 2011, as the leadership became a little bit more radicalized, the regime arrested them, put them under house arrest. Both Mousavi and Karoubi are still under house arrest, and put an end to that movement. This time, that movement, in the Green Movement, lasted for 20 months. This time, the movement started was mostly working class, students, and women were heavily involved. So there are elements of the working class, elements of the definitely the working class, but also elements of the middle class represented by both students and women.
Massage, can the regime adapt itself enough to survive? I know Elliot Abrams told us the IRC, the Revolutionary Guard, have control 50% of the economy, so not much incentive, right, to make any real change?
The Islamic Republic is heavily controlled by the Revolutionary Guard. I agree with Mr. Abrams, Revolutionary Guard, but also the clergy. It's an alliance between the two. They come similar from similar backgrounds, but they have no interest. In combination, they probably control more than 50% of the GDP or GNP of the Islamic Republic. They have very little interest in changing anything. But unfortunately, the problem is that from day one, there have been changes coming within the Islamic Republic, but all of it is in the greater interest of the clergy and the Revolutionary Guard. There have been changes throughout, but every time they change anything, it's more in the interest of the rulers rather than the population.
Now, the U.S. really didn't stand behind the Green Revolution or put ourselves out front. Does the U.S. need to do that? And on the nuclear deal, should there be linkage?
Well, the nuclear deal is already finished. It's already done. It was to restrict Iran's ability to make the bomb. But in 2009, President Obama was not very really active. He took sides with the people, but the people stood in the street were calling for him. They said, which side are you on? And the protesters were saying, Obama, meaning it sounds like Obama, meaning he is with us. So he wasn't really very energetically involved in supporting the protest. He did a little bit the rights of the Iranian people. He talked about a little bit, but that was it. This time, it didn't last very long, but this administration is more active in favor of the protesters and their rights and so forth. But as a whole, the United States involvement is not as important. The United States could have, for whatever is going to happen, will happen over there. The support is important that the United States supports them, but what happens over there? This time, the regime basically shut down the telegram, filtered everything. The United States could have produced logistical aid, like free internet of some kind through satellite. And
do you call for more U.S. sanctions?
Well, the U.S. will do what the U.S. wants to do. The problem is that whenever the United States acts over there, they call the protesters that they say that, well, you're American agents and you're CIA agents and CIA promoters. But if the United States doesn't say anything, doesn't do anything, then Iran has another argument to make that, well, you're opposing a regime that's sanctioned by God that defends Islam, and if you're against it, you're going to be muharrab, meaning that you're warring against God, you're the enemy of God, and so you should be executed. And in Iran, being muharrab, warring against God, his punishment is very severe, and that's execution. So the Islamic Republic has the rhetoric, no matter what the United States or Iranians do, they have no rights. That's it.
All right.
Go ahead.
As we get down to the last minute or two, tell us what would be a real revolution? What would democracy look like, and what time frame probability for success?
The timing is very difficult. What we know is that the vast majority of the Iranian people are against the Islamic Republic. They no longer want the Islamic Republic. Their slogans basically shout very, very radical ideas. And they are talking, for example, one slogan was that the students had shouted in 1999, it disappeared from 2003 protests, from 2009 protests, and 2010 protests. It has now come back. The slogan is, the people are miserable. The clerics or the clergy are acting like God. Basically, it attacks the economic foundation, the political and ideological foundation of the Islamic Republic. The vast majority are against them. The problem is that they have to act all at the same time. Last time it was the middle class, the working class couldn't join in. This time with more working class, students and women, the middle class participated on a smaller scale, but the merchant class didn't join in, and that is a problem that they have to surmount.
Good points. Sounds like more optimistic, though, than the last time you were here about change, and it's going to be incremental over time. Thanks to Dartmouth Professor Massaj Parsa. Finishing off our show today with Elliot Abrams, his book, Democracy in Iran, Why It Failed, How It Might Succeed. Thanks to Massaj, thanks to Elliot, thanks to our national audience for listening. We'll see everybody next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
Biz Talk Radio.